One of these days, you and I are going to spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Welcome back. Joining us now is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Folk. Go to mercenarygeologist.com.
Happy Friday to you, Alan.
And it's always good to have you back. Oh, somebody just told me that was one of my favorite bumpers. You know, I get slightly distracted sometimes from text messages when we're... I can generally read a text message or an email, but I have a hard time responding to them when I'm talking. Hey, you know what?
Well, I understand that. You know, we're of a generation that, well, I have 10 thumbs, so me typing on a keyboard, and I write for a living, you know, that it's not fast, you know. When I was in high school, it's the only time I ever got a B or a C in high school, and that was my two semesters of typing. So,
one of the topics we talked about was the earthquake swarm in Oklahoma. Man, those things continue out there. I'm no say, but they've had three plus earthquakes so far this week.
Well, and it's becoming increasingly obvious that those are due to injection of water from drilling operations. But, you know, I personally don't get real concerned about 3.0 earthquakes, no matter how many of them you have. You know, it's an area that is not on a plate boundary. It is part of the relatively stable craton of North America, of the North American plate. So the odds of a major earthquake there are minuscule. And by a major earthquake, I would define that as a 7.0 or better. The chances even of a 6.0 or better are pretty slim, in my opinion. And so, you know, we need oil. We need to wean ourselves from foreign oil supplies, and Oklahoma is historically and continues to be one of the most productive oil-producing states.
Well, today, Mickey and I are going to be talking about how extinct undersea volcanoes trigger rare tsunami earthquakes. Well, if they're extinct, how can they cause a tsunami earthquake? And first of all, what is a tsunami earthquake?
Well, a tsunami earthquake is an earthquake that is, the epicenter would be underneath the ocean. In other words, the epicenter is not part of a landmass. And the seismic waves from these so-called tsunami earthquakes are very slow, 2 to 3 times slower in their propagation through the crust underlying the ocean basin than a normal earthquake. And there's probably about a 10 that are known since we've had seismographs around, and seismographs have been around since mid-20th century. So we've had a limited time to know about these things, recognize them. They've been recognized in the last few years. And they're not particularly large earthquakes, but they can generate large tsunamis, local tsunamis. So there's a new theory, and it's just that, a theory, that they are caused when a plate is being subducted. And we've talked about that ad infinitum, about subducting plates throughout the world, where oceanic crust is diving underneath continental crust. If there is an old volcano there, for instance, something like the Hawaiian chain, seamount volcanoes, and often there's lots of volcanoes on the floor of the ocean that do not pierce the water, and so these seamount extinct seamount volcanoes And they are extinct. When they get subducted, it's like the analogy has been used is the tread on a tire, and they kind of stick. And they when the plate moves, it's slowed down. And those are theorized to be the types of earthquakes that can cause local, but significant tsunamis.
Do these underwater volcanoes, I mean, they look just like one that's above water? It's just underwater?
Well, they're generally they're flat-topped. Generally, they're called seamounts, and they're generally plateau-like in form. And that happens basically because they're underwater, and so water has pressure, and ocean currents erode them off, and they generally become flat topped. So and when they pierce the a lot of these occur in the Southwest Pacific, and when they pierce the ocean atmosphere boundary, in other words, when they reach a level where they actually extrude onto the land or land that they themselves created, they often end up with reefs around them called atolls, like Bikini Atoll, which is the one we blew up in the Southwest Pacific with a nuclear bomb. So they generally have flat tops to them.
I got you, because you know a lot of people at one point, all but Pangaea was underwater. Is the amount of land, Mickey, covered by water? I mean, the amount of, I guess it's still land. It's just underwater land. Has that increased over the millennium?
Well, I can't draw. You know, I'm going to have to plead ignorance on that. I cannot bring up any factoids that would document that the land mass has increased throughout geological history. My gut feeling is no. We certainly built landmass in the early parts of the Earth. Whether there is more landmass now than there was in Rodinia or Gondwanaland or Pangaea, I can't answer that question. My gut feeling is that it's probably fairly constant over, say, the last billion and a half years since Rodinia was the supercontinent.
But basically, what's underwater is very similar to what's above water.
In terms of land mass?
Yeah, well, in terms of geology and stuff like that?
Well, no, not really, because what's above water is generally continental crust. These cratons, these granite underlying continental crust, whereas what's underwater is oceanic crust, and those are generally basaltic in composition. That's why they're subducted, because basalt's heavier than granite, so the oceanic crust is heavier, and it dives underneath the lighter granitic continental crust, which tends to float on the mantle.
All right, I know subduction, but could you explain it to those who may have missed one of our previous interviews?
Well, subduction is one of the mechanisms of the main mechanism of plate tectonics, where oceanic crust that is created at the spreading ridges moves out on equal sides from the spreading ridges till it hits a continental crust, and because it's heavier, it dives under. So this is basically the premise of the conveyor belt theory of plate tectonics.
All right. Now, these extinct underwater volcanoes are prone to cause tsunamis during the subduction process. Did I get that right?
Yeah, so where you have subduction, we have that all over the world. We have it, the Ring of Fire, which goes from Tierra del Fuego all the way up the Americas to the Aleutians to Russia to Japan through Indonesia to New Zealand, basically. that whole ring of fire is a subduction zone. We have subduction zones in the Mediterranean. We have continental collision in the Indian plate and the Himalaya, and the Asian plate caused the Himalayas. So, yeah, it happens all over the world.
All right, you're saying that scientists first discovered tsunami earthquakes in fairly recently, what, 35 years ago, but it's still a very rare event. How does this sort of tsunami earthquake differ from, say, your typical tsunami?
Well, number one, these tsunami earthquakes, there's only about 10 of them recognized so far. They propagate tsunamis and are called tsunami earthquakes because they are not major earthquakes. The major earthquakes that generally cause tsunamis are related to subduction processes, but they are giant earthquakes that occur near the plate boundaries, and they propagate quite rapidly. So those would be the ones that would cause, say, Pacific Ocean basin-wide tsunamis. The tsunami caused by the world's largest earthquake known, which was in, if memory serves, 1960. I know it was in southern Chile. That was a 9.5. The second largest earthquake ever recorded would be in Anchorage, Alaska, in 1964. That was a 9.2. The third might be the one in Japan we had in 2011. That was a 9.0. So the big tsunami earthquakes, or the big earthquakes that cause tsunamis, let me back up and correct myself, are associated with huge earthquakes, and those effects can be felt for thousands of miles. The tsunami earthquakes that we know about are relatively minor earthquakes that cause local tsunamis.
You know, one thing I have noticed after some of these earthquakes that we get, undersea earthquakes, we seem to have far more tsunami warnings than we have tsunamis.
Why? Well, that's because that's been motivated by pretty, as the knowledge of these things have occurred and as scientists have warned us about them, we have developed tools to predict them. So it starts with the seismograph, the record of seismic events, and we now have many, many more seismographs established worldwide, and that's increasing all the time. The other thing that we have now that we didn't have prior to, say, the early 90s was GPS, global positioning systems. So now we have all these global positioning systems scattered, instruments scattered all over the world. Beginning in after the giant tsunami that killed, what, 250,000 people in Aceh, an island in a province in Indonesia in 2004, that resulted in a worldwide tsunami warning system. So these things did not exist prior, and this tsunami warning system certainly has only existed for less than the last 10 years worldwide. So that's part of the reason.
Mickey, since we've last spoken, other than this earthquake swarm we've seen in Oklahoma, have there been others we should be mindful of?
I'm sorry, you cut out on me, Alan. Could you repeat that question?
Hey, no problem. That's it. Mickey was telling me that might happen. Since we last spoke, other than this earthquake swarm we've seen in Oklahoma that's ongoing, have there been any other significant geological events that we've yet to discuss?
Well, we've had some major earthquakes over the last month or so. I'm not real sure. I think it's been about a month since since we last talked, but we've had a significant number of earthquakes. We had this period in April and May where we had an abundance of greater than 7.0 earthquakes. We are on pace right now to have one of the most active seismic years in since we've been compiling all this data. Since we last talked, there have been several 6.1s, 6.0s, in a, let's say, greater than 6.0, and we track those. For anybody that's interested, you can go to the USGS website, earthquake website, and you can sign up for notification, email notification, of all earthquakes in the world, and you set the parameters of how big you want to report. So we set our parameter at greater than 6.0. The last event that I have recorded, I'm scrolling through my Twitter page because we tweet all this stuff. There was a 6.8 on July 11th. That would have been a week ago today, I suppose. And that was 103 miles east of the island of Honshu in Japan. So we have had some significant events, but nothing that's caused, to my knowledge, widespread damage or loss of life.
Mickey, are there currently any active undersea volcanoes?
Oh, sure. Yeah, all over the place. That's what fuels plate tectonics in the East Pacific Rise, more importantly in the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, which is the largest spreading center on the planet. Goes from Iceland all the way at least down to the Azores off the coast of Western Africa. And those things are erupting all the time.
Now, are these different than the black smokers?
No, the black smokers are a product of those volcanoes. I didn't quite say that right. Yes, they are different, but the black smokers are a ramification, small ramification, of much wider spread basaltic magmatism on the earth floor. So the black smokers are where you have circulating hot water and hydrothermal vents and the spewing out of massive sulfides. We mine equivalent massive sulfides that are 2.4 billion years old in the Abitibi Belt of Quebec right now. So we have modern-day analogs to those, and those black smokers are very important because they are likely could be the source, the first life on the planet. So they are their own little ecosystems, very deep, and they operate on chemical synthesis versus photosynthesis at the bottom of the ocean.
Now, I know we've discussed some super volcanoes, Yellowstone, Iceland, I guess what, Mount Pinatubo is one, Pompeii, or are there any super volcanoes that are underwater of that magnitude, that scale?
Yeah, well, there was a super volcano in the Indian Ocean that contributed to the demise of the dinosaurs in 65 million years ago, one of these flood basalt sort of things. There are arguments very based on good science that the Iceland volcanoes, and there's a slew of those, could be looked at as potential supervolcanoes because they are located on a geological hotspot, a mantle hotspot, and also the Mid-Atlantic spreading ridge. So we've talked about this geological catastrophe thing, and it is my opinion that the Iceland volcanoes could be the potential, the geological catastrophe that we are most susceptible to that could wreak havoc on life on the planet as we currently know it. I want to go back and, you know, you asked me, have we had any big geological events? And I'd forgotten about, there was an 8.0 earthquake in the Aleutian Islands June 23rd. So my apologies for not remembering that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember after you and I were speaking about the earthquake swarm that was taking place in Alaska, it seems like every time you and I talk, either that day or the next day or 2 days later, we have a big one. And we were talking about that earthquake swarm in Alaska, and then we got the big one. I'm wondering now if we haven't cursed somebody to an eruption of an undersea volcano.
Well, I don't know. You know, a lot of times we don't even know these undersea volcanoes are erupting because they're under the sea, and some of them are, tend to be in very deep water. So, you know, volcanic eruptions are occurring constantly underneath the ocean. So just as they occur constantly on land masses, I mean, find a time when there wasn't a Hawaii volcano spewing out lava someplace. You know, curious thing to me this year has been the number of significant earthquakes. This is certainly a statistical anomaly, a statistical outlier.
Would an undersea volcano be as destructive as one? I mean, obviously, if it's under the sea, it's away from human population. But, I mean, it goes through everything that a one above the water would do?
Well, they're different, number one, because the undersea ones would be basaltic volcanoes. And those sorts of eruptions generally are not very disruptive. They would be equivalent to the Hawaii volcano. So they don't result in these big steam-driven explosions like we would see at Mount St. Helens or Vesuvius or Mount Etna. So no, the undersea volcanic eruptions, they do not generally cause widespread damage because they're not where people live. They don't kill people because they're not where people live, unless they result in tsunamis.
Do you ever look at any of the moons out in the solar system for your study, or is everything Earth-based?
Well, I certainly, you know, I'm an Earth scientist. My original degree was a bachelor's degree in Earth science. My second degree was in geology. Now, a lot of that has to do with where I studied, but I'm interested in all things like that. I'm a scientist, so I'm fascinated by Earth science, planetary science, solar system science. You know, I took enough physics and chemistry in college that I at one time was very conversant in things such as quantum mechanics and thermodynamics and the theory of the atom and lots of stuff. So I like all that sort of stuff, Alan.
Well, the reason I ask is, like, Europa is a very geologically mm-hmm. active moon, and there are lots of volcanoes, and some people theorize that it has that water ocean that's frozen, that below the ice level is liquid water being fueled by volcanoes.
Yeah, well, the theory actually, if my studies are correct and my memory is current, is that the liquid water underneath ice caps and Europa is an ice planet, a water ice planet. We know that, and it's covered. Basically covered by ice, but it has a very strong tidal pull from Jupiter. It's a moon of Jupiter, for those that don't know, and it's water, and it's frozen on the surface. The theory is that water is liquid underneath the ice cap, and it's due to the tidal currents of that water being pulled back and forth by the planet Jupiter, and that's what causes it to be liquid. It is not a rocky planet, to our knowledge. It's very far out in the solar system, and the rocky planets basically end at Mars. So we have the rocky planets, we have Mercury, Venus, Earth, the asteroid belt, and Mars. And beyond that, the next planet out is Jupiter, and that's one of the giant gaseous planets.
We've been speaking with Mickey Pope.
Europa is ice, water ice.
Gotcha. We've been speaking with Mickey Pope. Mickey is the mercenary geologist. Go to mercenarygeologist.com.